There will be spoilers ahead. Lots of spoilers, so be careful, won't you? Ah, finally, I have some free time so I can just sit down and binge watch that reboot of Manimal on streaming. Let's see. Got my soda, my snack. I'm all set.
I hunger.
Okay, David Bowie Vampire, it's not 6 o'clock yet, now is it? So we're just going to have to wait till it's actually 6.
I hunger.
Don't you shake your dinner dish at me, it's not 6.
I hunger.
6 o'clock is not for a whole other hour. I can get in 2 episodes if I'm lucky.
I hunger.
No.
I hunger.
No.
I hunger.
Every time I want to sit down and just watch some quality entertainment...
I hunger.
Fine, fine. I'm going to get your blood, okay? Only supposed to be once every 7 days, but no, has to be here, has to be now. I'm going.
Run, run, run.
Oh, I'm going to run. I'm going to run right to this episode of Max Mike Movies. Pardon the mess. David Bowie Vampire, well, he's not quite house-trained yet. But you know who is? Our host, Max. You've really sunk to a new low. Levine. Say hello, Max.
So low. So very low.
And me...
Run, coward. I hunger.
I'm sure you do. And me, I'm just that guy sitting on the couch. Mike, I wrote this at the last second loose. We're in the midst of our series, I Want to Watch Your Film, where we look at offbeat vampire films, and this week it is indeed David Bowie and Catherine Deneuve in 1983's The Hunger. This movie was brought up by a lot of folks in a poll question a couple episodes back, and as neither of us had seen it, we thought, why not? Speaking of poll questions, let's get to that.
Poll question.
The question on everyone's lips last week was, what overlooked folkloric monster is most deserving of its own movie? You pulled up a really diverse list, and I have no idea why I'm talking like this. So let's start off with our... I'm going to put Beaker in the milk. Let's start off with our old pal, Dave. He wrote, quote, Grendel obviously comes to mind. The book was good. I would like to see a really good version of The Legend of Sleepy Hollow. Zombies and vampires capture the 21st century popular imagination in a way that a headless horseman simply can't. But maybe one could do a version where the headless part is a metaphor for drug addiction. I would also like to see leprechauns well done. And
I'm
their
the
lucky
leprechaun.
Charms. Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, okay, but he points out well done. Otherwise, I would mention the Leprechaun movie series, including Leprechaun in the Hood.
Well, how about the character in Jack the Giant Killer? Because that's...
Oh, yes. Seize the bone!
Yeah, sure. A good Dybbuk story could also be fun. In Japan, I would like to see either a good Kappa story or a good Nekomata story, end quote.
Nekomata?
Poor Grendel's had an accident, so may you all. A Dybbuk is a Jewish sort of ghost, a spirit that sticks itself to a living person, for those who did not know, like me.
Yeah, likewise.
Thanks, Dave. Really? I would have thought you would have known. Yeah.
It wasn't what I thought it was. I thought a Dybbuk was just sort of a generic term for demon.
Oh, I had to go look it up. Kelly J. Cooper said, quote, for me, it's a tie between the Dover Demon and Puck Wudgies, or maybe something about the Bridgewater Triangle in general, end quote. So I had to look those up. The Dover Demon is actually from Dover, Massachusetts.
I hate those Dover demons. I hate Tom. I hate Dick.
I hate Larry. It apparently appeared in 1977 once, and it was a diminutive little freakish thing. You may not have known this. The Bridgewater Triangle is also in Massachusetts and apparently is a triangle area of land where a lot of UFO sightings and such happened in Massachusetts. Did not know that one.
Ah, this wouldn't happen to be near some of the old marijuana growing fields, would it?
I'm sure it isn't. And Puckwudgies was something, I think it was from Virginia. They're also a diminutive little thing that, but whatever.
Yeah, it's some like mischievous thingy. I've heard of those.
Thanks, Kelly.
Yeah.
Nick Hoffman offered, quote, Jabberwocky, end quote.
Jabberwocky has shown up in a couple of movies, including the one Michael Palin did.
Yeah, but where else?
In the Tim Burton Alice in Wonderland, the Jabberwock shows up.
Oh, yeah, that never got made, though, so, right.
Well, it kind of, Yeah, it did.
Oh, it's like Indiana Jones 4 and
Godfather 3. 3.
Yeah, it didn't really actually happen.
Mythical movies that never happened. Ever!
Charles Forsythe's answer was, quote, the Itan Momen. This is Japanese for one Itan of cotton. An Itan is a measure of cloth about 10, 11 meters, so it's similar in concept to a bolt in Western terms.
Oh, that's right, the strangling shroud creature. I've heard of this.
It flies around at night and finds people to strangle to death. It's creepy, silent, mysterious. So is my gas. And terrifying if you really think about it.
Nothing mysterious about your gas.
No, it's very, very regular. It's appeared in some Japanese manga and anime, but never in a Western film, end quote. Wow, that is one creepy-sounding monster, but is it worse than the demon that screams at kids at Christmas time? Yes, that's a real thing. Thanks, Charles. Yeah, I saw this. It popped up randomly on YouTube the other day. There's apparently, around the holiday time, a demon shows up and screams at children. And, you know, have you been good? It's basically like if you're five and Guar shows up. That's kind of what it is.
If you approach the stage, you will die.
Mark, join the band. Okay. Richard was next with, quote, golems. One can argue Frankenstein's monster is one, but it's really not, end quote.
Not really. End quote. No, it's not made out of clay.
No, and it doesn't have the symbol. Because the whole point of the golem is the really cool is it's got the symbol for, I'm sorry, I just read that
Truth. Yeah,
truth. It's the word in the Hebrew reading, of course, the correct way. Truth. And if you remove one character, it becomes dead.
It becomes death. Emeth. Right.
Yeah. It's a main character sort of kind of in the latest Dan Brown novel. Don't recommend it. But cool. Thanks, Richard. Yeah,
also, it's a big mistake if you scratch out the last letters and add a T, because then it becomes Emmett the Vampire.
And nobody wants that.
Nobody wants that.
See, last week's poll question. Keith Wright snuck in with a response to Charles that read, quote, one of my favorite zombie movies is the Korean film Train to Busan. Great claustrophobic action sequences. Also, a story of family, love, and reconnection. Also, I think he means they should make a movie about the Chupacabra, end quote. Thanks, Keith.
Yes, and they should give it some guns.
No. Deeper, and don't really look it up. Really, just don't. No.
Really don't.
Joe Estevez. Derek Steele posted, quote, Beowulf, but good this time, end quote. Yes, one that's Anthony Hopkins ass free. Thank you, Derek.
Yes, maybe without the creepy animation. Yes.
Yeah. Matthew Reisman gave us, quote, I'd like a good movie about the Erinyes Furies, the horror of cosmic justice, although I'm afraid a bunch of female monsters punishing perjury would make them the heroes right now, end quote. Point and match. Thanks, Matt.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Swinging on over to the website, we have Vince, who lives in Canada, which makes our audience international.
Good day, Vince.
He posted, quote, underused folkloric monster? Why, 17th century Japanese, oh boy. Kuchisakiana, of course. A malicious spirit.
You
know this one, huh? A malicious spirit of a woman with a partially covered face and carries a pair of scissors, a knife, or some other sharp object. She asks potential victims if they think she is beautiful. You better know the right answer. If you say yes, she will reveal that the corners of her mouth are slit from ear to ear, and she will then repeat the question again and again. You'd better know the right answer, end quote. Wait, what is the right answer?
The right answer is always yes.
Okay.
And it doesn't help. Even if you say yes both times, she will follow you home and murder you.
So what if you say no?
Then she kills you on the spot.
I think the right answer is no.
Yeah, I think so. See, now the modern version, of course, would be a spirit who would walk up and say, does this make my ass look big?
Okay, sure. Mm-hmm. Do I make you horny, baby? Okay.
Baby.
There you go. Thanks, Vince. The mailbag seems full of what? Why, a missive from our pal Bill O'Lading.
Bill O'Lading, Bill O'Lading. Fine top of the morning to you.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
He's not Irish.
Actually, I think he is.
with that last name? Really?
You'd think French, I know. You know it's not his real name. Please tell me you know it's not his real name. Okay, good.
I know Bill O'Lading isn't his real name.
No.
But I know the other, his other real name, which does not sound Irish.
No, because that's not his real name. You don't actually know his real name. I know his real name. You do not. But for all intents and purposes, his name is Bill. Anyway, he sent us, quote, I was going to say the Loch Ness Monster. However, checking IMDb, who does that? There's a host of films wherein Nessie stars. None seem to have lingered in the cultural zeitgeist, except possibly Scooby-Doo and the Loch Ness Monster 2004, but I digress. Sure.
No, Nessie.
I still haul out hope that she makes an appearance on the television series Outlander, though. What? You can have a television show premised on time traveling across centuries through druid stones, but you cannot have Nessie farting around in the background? Philistines!
Absolutely.
Yeah. I thought for a bit and said to myself, this is true, how about a film about Homer's Odyssey? Have we had one of those? I Googled it because I'm a millennial, and lo and behold, Chris Nolan is directing this very epic set to be released in 2026. Host note, there was also the 1954 Kirk Douglas movie Ulysses. Now, back to Bill.
There was also a miniseries in the 90s.
But this is Max Mike Movies, not Max Mike miniseries. True. Ooh. What if we did that as a series idea? Oh, Max Mike miniseries? Boy. That might be interesting.
Yeah. Let us
know if you think that'd be interesting.
Yeah.
Anyway, back to Bill. Quote, Matt Damon as Odysseus, Tom Holland, Anne Hathaway, and all the great and terrible Creepy Crawlies of the Mediterranean. I hope he doesn't include those actresses that, but anyway.
Oh.
I cannot wait to see the terrible Cyclops, the worshipful Lotus Eaters, the cannibalistic, oh dear gods, Laestrigonians.
Is that right? Close. Okay.
The conniving Circe, especially cannot wait to see the special effects turning the crew into swine, and the bewitching sirens. As a gay man, I'm immune. Ha ha ha. That's his word. A word of caution, the story will not make sense at all without the gods playing a major role. Case in point, Troy, 2004, which left the gods as impotent figments. Homer makes no sense at all if the gods are not real and active in the affairs of men. Troy rendered the siege upon Troy boring. No small feat. And who should play Zeus? My vote? Jimmy Kimmel. End quote.
What?
Ah, yes, Jimmy Kimmel, everyone's favorite overlooked folkloric monster.
Yeah, very patriarchal and wise appearing Jimmy Kimmel.
Okay.
Bill, I think you might be off base on that one.
Yeah, a little bit too much at top of the morning. Anyway, thanks, Bill.
Yeah.
Lastly, hold on to your bon mots. It's time for another episode of Max and Doris. So, here's an entry on our hotline.
Yes, yes.
Down, Max.
Never, never.
Down, boy, down.
No. Mine.
You have to, or we can't hear what she says.
Rough.
Hello, Max Mike Movies. Hi, Max. This is Doris Simplemeyer here to answer your poll question for the week, which just happens to be, what underused folkloric monster deserves its place on the silver screen? Well, I'm going to come up with one that you're going to go, wait, you're right. And that's the Loch Ness Monster. Sure, we've talked about him at length. Sure, somebody tried to pretend that he was Jack the Ripper in a certain movie. But other than that, we really haven't had anything about the Loch Ness Monster. Yes, he's real, in case you wanted to know. He is. I swear. Anyway, that's my answer. I hope you guys have a wonderful week. I'll see you tonight, Max. Can't wait. That movie sounds like a scream. And I'll look forward to hearing next week's episode. Bye.
Huh, another one for the Loch Ness Monster.
Oh, okay.
Well, it's sort of another vote for Nessie, I guess, but I don't think I've ever heard anybody call it him before.
No, it's usually her, just because Nessie sounds more feminine.
Yeah, but I can attest that, unfortunately, there is no Loch Ness Monster. I once stood on the shores of the Loch and pitched rocks into it for hours. Max was there. And
I
the
was
result,
there.
No Nessie. Proof!
Nothing!
Thanks, Doris.
So, you're welcome, science.
Because if there's one thing the Loch Ness Monster is going to come up for, it's rocks.
Yep.
Sadly, They're I actually that did way. That. I sat there. I think it was like 2 to 3 hours. I just kept pitching rocks.
We were all out there. We were all out there whipping rocks into the lock going, here, Nessie. Didn't work.
No.
Apparently she knows that one.
And boy, was my arm sore the next day. Yeah. Anyway, what about you, Max? What is your answer for what folkloric monster deserves its own film that ain't got one?
I know it sounds silly, but I want to see the Kamikiri.
What's that?
Which is the hair cutter. It is a spirit that flies through the air, sneaks up on people, and cuts their hair off.
Do you mean like Lovey Howell from that episode of Gilligan's Island with the mosquitoes?
You need a haircut.
Okay.
Yeah, only this is much more effective in that people often don't notice it's happened until someone looks at them and screams.
Okay.
Sometimes it's at night, sometimes it's on the street. I would love the whole thing where this is the big fear, is getting your hair cut off.
Wait, what is this thing again? The harakiri? What?
No, the kamikiri.
Kamikiri. Okay. Kami. Is it Japanese? Yep.
It is.
Okay. Well,
I think literally, kami is spirit, and I believe kiri is like haircut or even barber.
Okami is wolf, but okay. Mm-hmm. Anyway, lots of Japanese ones this week.
Yeah. What about you? What's an underserved monster population?
I mean, I'm going to actually agree with Dave. I like the book Grendel. It's a book that my partner read when he was in high school and really liked. And I went, it's not very long, but it's literally Beowulf from Grendel's perspective. And that quote is just this wonderfully underplayed quote when he has his arm cut off, I think. And he literally says, poor Grendel's had an accident, so may you all. And of course, then they have to deal with Grendel's mom. Grendel's mom! So, yeah. But thanks tons for your answers. We love them all.
Yes,
so how about some more? Answer, please. Are you a fan of vampires? And if so, why? And if not, why not? Let us know. You'll get quoted on the show and get scads and scads of bumpy bucks. Cryptocurrency is all the rage right now, so why not back one that declares it's totally fake right from the outset? Bumpy bucks. Yep. They're made from virtual oats. And other things.
100% reality free.
Yeah. And they will always be so. I promise. But right now, we've got to get to
the facts.
So this is the 1983 film The Hunger with David Bowie, not the TV series from 1997 that had Bowie introducing tales of horror, just so we're clear.
Yeah.
Budget, $10 million. Take. Well, we have some contradictory info here. On one hand, we have an estimated $6 million. On the other, it was $12.3 million. So, not a success.
Yeah. No. I see what you did there.
I guess.
I promise. Jolly
that is
good.
The last time I will do that this episode.
Thank you.
Yes, David Bowie is actually playing the cello in those scenes because, of course, he is.
Yeah, sure. Oh, it's a musical instrument. Very well. I'll master it immediately.
It took only a few weeks, but, you know, weeks. It's David Bowie. And as soon as I saw him playing, it's like, I just bet he learned it for this. I know he's really playing because it's David Bowie. Wow, that is dedication. Seems the costume designer Milena Cananero was just not happy with the handkerchief Bowie was to wear. Unable to find one in London, she just hopped a plane to Rome without telling anyone on her own dime and bought the material there.
Good God, that's either dedication or obsession.
Yeah, well, speaking of dedication, to make his voice sound all raspy as his character aged, Bowie would go outside the night before filming those scenes and scream out every punk song he knew.
Which was probably all of them.
Quite honestly, I would love to have been there just listening. That would have been awesome.
Oh, God, that would be amazing. If only someone had a tape recorder.
I will say, of all the big rock and roll stars, he's the one I did see in concert once.
Wow.
Yeah. Cool. That opening band? Bauhaus, who was discovered by director Tony Scott in a London nightclub.
Yeah.
Speaking of Tony Scott, this was his feature film debut as director. Wonder if he learned anything from Brother Ridley. We will come back to that. And what did Bowie think of this movie after he made it? Quote, I must say there's nothing that looks like it on the market, but I'm a bit worried that it's just perversely bloody at some points, end quote.
Mm.
Ah.
Mm.
And what about Susan Sarandon? Seems she had some problems with the ending, which we will get back to. She said, quote, the thing that made the film interesting to me was the question of, would you want to live forever if you were an addict? But as the film progressed, the powers that be rewrote the ending and decided that I wouldn't die. So what was the point? All the rules that we'd spent the entire film delineating, that Miriam lived forever and was indestructible, and all the people that she transformed eventually died, and that I killed myself rather than be an addict, were ignored. Suddenly, I was kind of living, she was kind of half dying, nobody knew what was going on, and I thought that was a shame, end quote. Oh, studio execs.
Yeah.
And we will be coming back to that.
But the chart says...
Yeah. You know what's missing from this movie? Well, a lot of things, but one of them... is the word vampire. not mentioned once.
It's like Only Lovers Left Alive. Nope, no, nobody says the V word.
Yeah. We've asked this many, many, many times, but when is New York not New York? Why? When it's London, jolly old chap.
Excuse me, I am walking here.
Now, to be fair, all the exterior stuff was New York. It was anything else was all London, jolly old chap. So age is a big question in this movie. Like, how old is Miriam Blaylock supposed to be? Though not actually stated, it's 6,000 years, 300 of which were spent with David Bowie / Jonathan. Mm. Blinkin' you'll miss him. That's Willem Dafoe as Second Phone Booth Youth. Whee!
It's two lines.
I know.
It was not his first movie, by the way. It was like his fourth.
No, but I didn't even recognize him. It was like, just, nope. He was like five, I think, yeah.
Yeah, he was a little boy.
This is a pretty racy film, but it used to be racier. Seems the MPAA was going to give it an X rating, which means no one will go see it, won't make any money, etc. So they took 3 months to recut it down to the R we see now. And I gotta say, it's barely R. Like, I swear there's a few more frames and it would have gone right to that X.
Yeah.
So, this movie is based on a book by Whitley Strieber. He also wrote two sequels, The Last Vampire and A Tale of Vampire Life, but they didn't catch on like some vampire franchises, and I bet we're going to come back to that too. Susan Sarandon is well known for her part in the Rocky Horror Picture Show, but her co-star in this, Cliff DeYoung, was in its sequel, Shock Treatment.
Yep, as were a couple of other people in this movie.
Yeah, I got anything else before I get to that pesky old plot?
Yes, Anne Magnuson makes a very brief appearance as the young lady who receives attentions from David Bowie in the bathroom at the very beginning of the film. Anne Magnuson, in addition to her acting, was the lead singer of the legendary group Bong Water.
Ah.
Yep. And Shane Rimmer, who shows up in one scene. He's the real estate agent. He has like four lines. Do you know why his voice was so familiar?
No, because it wasn't.
It was to me, because he was the voice of Scott Tracy from the Thunderbirds. Yep.
Thunderbirds are slow.
Yep.
No more pink films. Yeah, okay. Wow. Yep. Didn't place it, but cool. So let's get to that pesky plot. Yeah. It's the 80s. Oh boy, is it the 80s. But that cool new wave goth 80s.
Yeah, it's not like a Lost Boys 80s.
No. We're in New York. Sort of. And vampires Catherine Deneuve and David Bowie are prowling the nightclubs for tasty snacks. Finding a couple of live ones, they bring them back to their rad brownstone and feast, disposing of the bodies in their convenient basement incinerator. But it seems all is not well with Bowie Vamp. He started aging, which is, like, totally bogus because, like, vampires aren't supposed to age. A chance viewing of a local TV show interview with Dr. Susan Sarandon seems like it might be a clue to how to help Bowie. She's researching progeria, the rapid aging disease. First, Catherine goes to see Sarandon at a book signing and is obviously interested. Then Bowie goes to her office to try and get help, but she blows him off while he visibly ages while waiting for her. She doesn't see him, he leaves, angered. Once symptoms arrive, the disease is very rapid, aging Bowie decades in a few days. He pleads for Catherine to end his suffering, but see, this vampire thing is forever, dear. Here, lie in this nice box where you'll never actually die. Love you, kiss, kiss. With Bowie boxed, Catherine is free to pursue Susan, which she does, having sex with her and giving her a taste of her own blood, which will, of course, make her another vampire and doom her to the same unlife Bowie had. Susan goes nearly mad, realizing she can't eat normal food, and slinks back to Catherine's place. Catherine gets her a nice gigolo to eat, but then Susan's boyfriend comes looking for him, becomes snack number two. Just when everything seems like it's going to go Catherine's way, Susan tries to take her own life and end the unlife before it begins. But it seems all those coffins in the attic aren't quite down with this. The zombie remains of all of Catherine's lovers stage a revolt, toss her down four flights of stairs, which causes her to get sudden onset progeria, and then set them all free. This ends Catherine's reign of terror. Except Susan actually survives, moves to London, has a nice couple over for a snack, the end.
The film.
Yeah. So, Max, I know we
forgot about the little...
I didn't know. There's too much. These things go on too long. There's other characters and stuff, but...
Okay.
Besides, I want to discuss the impact of that, so, yeah. Mm-hmm. So you'd never seen this, right?
Nope. I'd heard about it for years. I just never got around to seeing it. People were all telling me, oh, it's so creepy and weird.
Is that why you didn't see it?
That, and it was only showing places for about 5 minutes.
Well, yeah, but there's always been video and DVD and stuff.
Yeah, that just... I don't know why. I think I was just sort of put off by people's description of it.
But David Bowie.
Yeah, David Bowie.
And David Bowie's cool.
And Susan Sarandon is gorgeous in this.
She is. But
and Catherine Deneuve is a friggin' goddess.
Well, and let's go ahead and get started with the cast.
Yeah, let's get the cast.
So Catherine Deneuve as Miriam Blaylock.
There's no R in her last name.
Deneuve.
Deneuve.
Yeah, okay.
Deneuve.
I know, but yeah. I can't speak French without my jaw twisting out of place, so that's what happens. So, I gotta say, while she doesn't have a lot of lines, she is the slinkiest, velvetiest vampire. Ooh. And I understand why people picked her a lot in the question last week, or the week before, actually.
She is like the physical manifestation of a purr.
Yeah, what a good description.
Thank you.
And there's one scene in particular where she first sees Susan Sarandon, and she doesn't say anything, but just suddenly Susan Sarandon looks up at her, and you can, like, it was a really great way of portraying that vampire charisma, or riz, as the kids are saying it today, for risins I don't understand.
Yes. Stuff and risins.
Yeah. I love those little grape shrinkly things. Those are great.
Ooh, those are good, yeah.
She's perfect.
Now she is very cool. She's exactly what a vampire should be like.
If you were casting this today, somebody I might choose is Janelle Monáe. I think Janelle Monáe would be wonderful in this part. Just sort of.
You don't think she's too young?
No.
Okay.
Because the idea is that she got to be changed in. Of course, I think Janelle Monáe is probably close to 40 by now. But she would slink around. And quite honestly, she looks more likely to have been in Egypt than Catherine Deneuve.
True.
That's neither here nor there. David Bowie sucked.
You said you weren't going to do that.
Sort of.
Lie.
I got to say here, I think this movie's a waste of David Bowie.
Never mind that he disappears halfway through it.
It's not even that far. Like, they throw him under makeup probably a third of the way into the film, and then they box him up. We watch the movie box up David Bowie and put him aside.
Like, admittedly, I'm sitting there going, no. Where can I buy David Bowie in a box or Boxo Bowie?
I know. But he, too, is the embodiment of slinky, charismatic.
And just cool. He can't not be cool.
No. And I don't go to white windowless vans with strangers, but I hate to say it. If David Bowie came up to me and said, I've got this cool van, I'd go sit in it.
Yeah. He is kind of irresistible. But they do nothing. They do almost nothing with him.
Yeah. Susan Sarandon, the scene, I'm a gay man, so lesbian sex does not interest me. But if you put Catherine Deneuve and Susan Sarandon, or their stand-ins, because mostly that's what it was, in bed with each other, I don't think it's easy to look away. I mean, wow.
Speaking as a straight man, no, it's not.
Did you have moments with that?
I had a moment or two. I mean, it's not... And it's not just when they're in bed naked, even when they're standing close to each other. It's so odd because I'm going, they have more chemistry than Deneuve and Bowie have.
Which is hard to do.
Yeah. She's really good. And I think she does a really good job of, like, I am so intrigued by this, but I am also so freaked out and terrified by it.
Apparently, Susan Sarandon, very straight, but even she said... You're standing next to Catherine Deneuve, who wouldn't be interested?
Sure.
Yeah. And the thing is that this film is meant to be a lot about the sensuality. So even though there are some very, very steamy scenes, I never once felt that they were...
gratuitous. I think it was sort of... part of it.
They were steamy. They were very, very steamy. And obviously Susan Sarandon and Catherine Deneuve threw themselves into it. So good for them. Cliff DeYoung is Tom Haver, the boyfriend you want to slap.
You do. You just want to slap him. This guy, you know, he was a musician first. He was the lead singer of Clear Light.
Oh.
Clear Light, 1960s rock band.
I have a Clear Light album.
They played with, like, The Doors and Hendrix and Janis Joplin. They were a big friggin' deal. He also played Brad Majors, asshole in the shock treatment.
Yeah, which I saw once and is all really...
Yeah, kind of disappointing, I think.
Some of the music's good in that, but it was very felt much like a, oh, what else can I do that will get me lots of attention? I'll do the same thing with TV. And it's like, eh, I didn't think it worked. He's fine. The problem with him as the character is the character's actually right.
Yeah,
the thing is, you just don't like him
about it.
yeah. So he's very male, he's toxic. Fine. Blah blah blah. We have a child actor, Beth Ellers. She's in there for she's in there for a little bit more than 5 seconds, and I think she does very well.
She was really good. I thought she was really interesting. My first thought when I was watching her is she also a vampire?
Does she know?
Yeah.
Because she's taking literally violin lessons with Miriam Blaylock, who's... Mm-hmm. I'm going to keep calling her Catherine Deneuve because whatever. They barely say her
That's
name.
Who she is.
I know. And there is a scene, and I want to come back to the scene, but I think she gives that very sassy teenager New York girl a really good go. And I think she's very good at what she does, but she's not there very much.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last character we're going to mention is played by Dan Hedaya, who's
just
Lieutenant...
What?
Who's been in everything, but it's like, he too, 5 seconds, and he's gone.
Yeah.
He has slightly more screen time than Willem Dafoe, who I didn't even recognize, so, yeah.
I always got the feeling he was trying to be Lieutenant Columbo, but he doesn't.
Maybe young Columbo. Oh, dear gods. Maybe. Please, NBC, do not do a show of young Columbo. Don't
the young
want
Columbo
that.
Mysteries.
Columbo babies.
just one more thing.
Oh, no.
God.
No.
So, stop putting that out in the universe.
I think it's a good cast, and it's not really an actor's film, but the actors they chose literally kind of slink their way through it in really visually interesting ways. So, So we had a credit very early on that made me go, huh, pretentious much? That is Makeup Illusions.
Yeah.
What did you think of the makeup?
I think it's very smart that they didn't really show you much and did it all in the dark.
I think it's good when it's shadowed.
Yeah. When you actually see it, it's like, wow, that's a lot of latex.
There's a couple of scenes where especially Bowie gets dragged into the... Mm. Well, there's never any sunlight in this film, which is how we know it's not New York. It's very cloudy and overcast. But when the light hits it, it's like, that's too much. But in the shadows, I thought it was actually pretty effective.
Yeah, and he's pretty good at being the old man. I mean, David Bowie is a musician first and an actor second. Sure. So he did a little of the olding things. You know, my legs are weak, my eyes are old and bent.
Yeah, and of course the sad thing is, that although I think he died when he was 69, he didn't really seem like that at all. He just seemed like David Bowie.
David Bowie, just a little thinner. That's about it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I thought it was all right. I mean, makeup in general in this movie is very understated and very subtle and very effective.
Partially because the film is so, what's the word I want? Blue.
Yeah, it's very blue.
Yeah.
And, oh boy, you think Tony Scott watched a whole lot of French New Wave?
No, what I think Tony Scott watched a whole lot of was Blade Runner. Since you wanted to get there. Okay. So we've got the very blue, cold cast to things. We've got a lot of scenes with Venetian blinds in the shadows, and both films have progeria in them. But I was
just
looking at...
Accelerated decrepitude.
Yeah, because that's what J.F. Sebastian has, and why he can't go off-world. And I'm just watching this going, there's just so many visual overtones, stylistic overtones that I'm getting from the film 2 years previous made by his brother. And I was just like,
jealous much?
I don't know about that, but he'd only done commercials up to this point.
And this is the guy who directed Top Gun, the first one. So.
Yeah, I mean, it's not that he wouldn't go on to do some much bigger things. It's just, it felt a lot like... To me, like Blade Runner and Ridley Scott.
I just kept picturing Ridley going, Mom, Tony's copying me.
I'm sure that's how it went. Totally sure.
Yep,
perfect impersonation of Ridley
Scott.
Thank
you. That was historically flawless.
This film is also, as I said, very 80s. It is very new wave 80s. I got to say, though, that the 80s was also a time when an indie film might actually get seen.
Yeah. And it was the rise of the indies, really. I mean, that was when... They stopped calling them art house films and making it sound like they were for just a very limited, pretentious audience. And now it's just like, no, these are movies that aren't part of the studio system and aren't owned by the man.
Yeah, which man, I don't know. But
I don't know. I think it was Bob.
I mean, it's hard to remember, but Terminator was basically an independent film done through Carol Co. And it cost next to nothing. And it, at that point, starred Schwarzenegger, who wasn't that big a deal. And otherwise, nobody else that people had heard of. And quite honestly, some of the initial special effects in that film are, shall we say, not great.
Yeah.
But it was the story. It was a really good story.
It's a terrific story and really good and great performances.
Yeah. And the 80s allowed you to do stuff like that. And these films would still show up in regular theaters, not just these little side theaters. A lot more
experimental time. So, we talked about that in our 80s series.
90s.
Or 90s. Well, 90s. Didn't we have a series on 1 year in the 80s?
I think we picked 1 year. But
Yeah, that's what I mean.
And, you know, I miss that. I miss everything having to be this giant, not having to be this giant, huge budgeted thing that if it doesn't make $3 billion in 10 seconds, it's a failure.
It's a failure, yeah.
Yeah, so, but.
No, I got to ask you, what did you think about the vampire lore in this?
Oh, you want to go there now? Okay.
Yes.
So, real quick, some of the things that they play with here is that they don't do a lot of the things that we're used to. So we don't have coffins that they sleep in. They sleep in
beds.
So I'd say I'd say sunlight is okay, but we never actually have any. It's always overcast. Yeah. So that's sort of an iffy thing. Mirrors are not a thing. And there's no fangs.
They don't bite. That's not how they open the wound. They carry these little hidden knives in the ankh they wear around their neck.
You know, I didn't really mind it because they added some things that were really interesting. And the idea of the blood, I mean, obviously that's how vampires make other vampires. That's been around. But when Susan Sarandon's been bitten, she's a doctor and things are weird. So she has a blood test. And one of her technicians basically says, there's two types of bloods in you and they're fighting each other. And she says, well, which one's winning? And the guy just sort of looks at her like, And I thought that was interesting. And I also thought the idea of, oh, if you weren't an original vampire, whatever caused that, because they never talk about it, there's a bloodborne disease. And since that's your thing, it's eventually going to affect you. And I was like, yeah, you're playing fast and loose, but you're also adding something I've never seen before that I kind of liked. What did you think?
I thought it was interesting. I especially thought the idea that vampires cannot die at all. They never say like, oh yeah, you stake through the heart, you're to blame because you give love a bad name. They just don't talk about sunlight. Although it turns out she's wrong, because when she is reduced, all of her zombie lovers crumble and disappear.
Except one, but let's come back to the ending.
I thought it was really interesting. I didn't mind. Nobody turned into a bat.
Oh, yes, there's none of that.
Nobody could fly.
No.
They were clearly stronger than normal.
But not like
that was
tons.
About it. Yeah. It wasn't like they could juggle cars or some such.
Although poor Bowie at the end, he was trying to attack this roller skater, and he can't quite manage it because the progeria is really set in on
him. Yeah, he's so affected.
But yeah. So yeah, we know we've seen other films that really play fast and loose, and we're like, I don't really buy your playing with the lore that much. Here, I don't mind it. No. Especially that subtle suggestion of the vampiric charisma and even the sort of mind speaking going on.
Yeah, there's a little of that because occasionally Miriam uses this strange vampire power on Dr. Roberts, Susan Sarandon, which is, of course, we all know from Bram Stoker, making you think you hear the phone ring.
Ooh. I thought that was part of the well-known vampiric power, vampiric streaming.
This is specific to telephones.
Sure.
Yeah,
but she also, I think there's one point she's playing music, and you get the impression that Susan Sarandon's kind of overhearing that and wonder where it's coming from, too.
There's a certain amount of the mind bond thing going on, but it's very abstract, and we don't really know.
Yeah. I will warn people, if you haven't seen this film, I'm going to say maybe 5 minutes in, and the film's like, all right, let's get to the sex.
Yeah. Yep. Come on. Get your shirts off. Here we go.
Yeah. And this film in times is very, very steamy, as we talked about a little bit before. And it's not gratuitous. It feels very much like this is what they live for.
It's pretty much organic with the story. And I don't think it's particularly exploitative. It's
no.
It's, you know, he's really trying for an arty feel.
Do you think he achieves it?
Sometimes. I don't know about like the sex in the bathroom. That's hard to make that kind of artistic. But the scene with Miriam and Sarah, with mostly shot through like gauze hangings, mm-hmm. and the ones with the two Blaylocks in the shower together,
mm-hmm.
I don't think that was gratuitous at all. I think it was actually kind of elegant.
No, and I bet both of them enjoyed it.
I bet everyone on set enjoyed it.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's a very erotic film. It's taking the real enticing, sexy side of vampirism and kind of elevating it even mm-hmm. beyond what most films did. I'm trying to think, can you think of another vampire film example where things were quite so based on the shared feelings, the sensuality as much?
Maybe Innocent Blood, but...
That was a show, no. Wasn't it?
No, that's True Blood.
Oh, True Blood.
Innocent Blood was a vampire movie. There's some of that in there.
Yeah.
But oddly, I think some of the old versions of Nosferatu or even the Frank Langella Dracula, there's the whole shared bond between Dracula and Mina.
Hmm.
Or Lucy. Lucy, excuse me. Mina's the one who dies, yeah.
Yeah.
So I think it's there, but I think this movie indulges it a lot more.
Yeah.
Which also brings up a question. What is the hunger referring to?
I mean, I assumed it was literally the need to eat.
I think it was something else, because you notice, why does Miriam keep changing people when she knows they're going to die?
Because she's lonely.
That's the thing. I think she's addicted too. She has to have someone around her. She can't stand to be alone.
Hmm.
I mean, I think that's why she's screaming in the coffin at the end.
I got to say, though... she's a real monster. Like, even though it's subtle and she seems very caring. I mean, well, before I go further, I'm going to ask you, do you think she actually loves David Bowie? I'm, you know.
To a degree, up to a point. Obviously, what she loves most is herself.
Right.
She's a classic narcissist in a lot of ways. She loves him sort of like the way, you know, you love your favorite coat or some such.
You know, the cope that flies around and bites people, that one.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's very much like, oh, yes, I love you, but I'm going to tell you you're going to live forever, but I know you're going to die in a few hundred years.
Yeah.
And you're going to die horribly.
Well, you're not going to die. That's the problem.
Oh, that's the makes worst part. You worse. End up as a ghoul or some such. Yeah.
Well, the way it's described in the trivia that I found is that you basically go into a sort of permanent semi-coma and are just slowly disintegrating. Which we get to in the end, because basically something spurs the Legion of Dead on, and they all break out of their coffins and put an end to this.
Why do you think that happened?
The only thing I can think of is because she's attached to all of them. Throughout the entire film, no matter what happens, even when David Bowie starts to, you know, disintegrate, she is very even-keeled, right? Her emotions are very much the way she wants. She's very controlled. She's very smooth. But at the point where Susan Sarandon basically tries to commit suicide not knowing any better, she goes nuts and she's like angry. And my guess is the power of that anger flowed back into her other lovers.
That makes sense.
And allowed them to get back out of their coffins
That's kind of what I thought. The emotional charge that she was feeling basically energized them.
Yeah. It's an interesting take. I've never seen this sort of thing before, and I think it's very well handled. There is a scene, though, and I did say we'd get back to this. Mm-hmm. So there's this, I'm going to guess she's probably around 12, 13-year-old girl.
Prepubescent,
Who has somehow been allowed to come to this rich lady's house to learn the violin, but also seems totally, up till a certain point, seems totally in control of herself in this situation, just the way 13-year-old New York girls think they are.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a scene where John Blaylock, David Bowie, who is now very old, and she doesn't recognize him. She thinks, oh, are you John's father? And he keeps saying, no, no.
She points out, you've got his eyes.
David Bowie's eyes, and those are kind of hard to miss.
yeah, that weird heterochromia thing.
Yeah, you know why that happened, right? He got hit in the eye with a rock when he was a kid.
And oh, his, no, I thought that was genetic.
Okay. No, his iris froze, so it doesn't get any bigger or smaller, and it, for some reason, changed the color. I don't remember why. But.
Okay.
So he attacks her, and I think the reason that he attacks her is that he believes that this is going to be the next companion in line after him.
Oh, I thought he was just getting desperate. Maybe he thought, well, if I feed on a child, it'll reverse this.
That too. I think those ideas could be in there. But he attacks this child and kills her.
Yeah.
Spoiler or warning.
You don't see it, but you know it happened.
How did you feel about that scene?
I was kind of shocked by it, but I thought it was I thought it worked.
Mm-hmm.
The whole sequence with the two of them is so odd. It should be creepy because she's playing and he's this old man walking around her. But there's something kind of grandfatherly about him.
But there's these great cuts to her eyes as she's playing where she kind of like darts off to the side when he's behind her like, I don't trust you, which is correct.
Yeah, that was right. I was sorry to see it happen, but I think it worked. It made sense.
My note was that it was both daring and creepy. I mean, it was a very upsetting scene. Whenever there's kids in danger in film, they never die. Never. No. It just does not happen. And here we do the whole thing where he goes down to the, where she eventually gets taken down to the basement, or down to Panama, if you will. thrown in the convenient.
Bully!
I don't know where that came from. I mean, I do, but it's a very disturbing scene. But in a way, I think it's very useful for us not being too in love with vampirism, right? Because that happens in other film series, Twilight. And and we shouldn't love these creatures. We shouldn't admire them because they're horrible. Miriam is really...
They're monsters.
She's this very quiet, smiling, silky, smooth, attractive monster.
Mm-hmm.
Keeping all her lovers alive in these boxes, which she drags with her through the centuries.
Yeah,
I mean, I'll give her that, but
she keeps them around. I guess it's like a collection.
Well, and she introduces him. It's like, oh, be nice to everybody, right? Here, comfort him. He needs comfort.
He's new.
Yes. He's new. He's zero. He's new. Yeah. So I mentioned also earlier that this was based on a book, and there was a little vampiric series. A few years earlier than that vampiric series, there was another vampiric series that came out. One called Interview with a Vampire. It came out in 76.
Never heard of it.
This one came out in 81. Did you see any parallels between that and this?
Well, there's a whole thing with the sexy vampires. I mean,
honestly, Bela Lugosi, he was supposed to be a sexy vampire. Yeah, I know.
He wasn't.
He was supposed to be.
I know he's supposed to be. And I mean, you got in the 70s, you had Frank Langella.
Yeah.
But the whole idea of vampirism itself being kind of sexy, Anne Rice is usually credited with that. I don't think it's accurate, but she's kind of one of the most high profile.
Well, I think
everybody was reading those damn books.
The other thing that I thought was odd is that, and it's not till the third book in the Lestat series. Is that there's ties to Egypt, Queen of the Damned. We find out that the original vampires were an Egyptian king and queen. Yeah. And they were put into that weird coffin in the mummy that they're not supposed to open ever again because it's got beetles in it. They were apparently the original vampires, and they were still around. And here we do have one scene where we have Catherine Deneuve, who is somehow Egyptian, just like Sean Connery.
As everyone knows, all the Brits are actually descended from ancient Egypt. Okay, anyway.
Ancient spirits of evil.
ancient armor.
So there's this weird tie to Egypt, which I didn't understand the point of that. I mean, vampires could have come from anywhere. Heck, they might have well have gone to Eastern Europe or Greece or Rome, for a lot that matters. Did you otherwise feel that this might have been riffing at all on Anne Rice, because she was one of the biggies?
I'm sorry to say, you use ancient Egypt because off the top of most people's heads, it's the oldest culture they can think of.
Yeah, we won't talk about like Sumeria, Mesopotamia, any of that
stuff. Or ancient China or any of those.
Ancient Chinese secret,
That's right. Galgan, right, take me away.
Okay.
I didn't really feel like it was riffing on them because Also, they weren't as foppish and annoying as her vampires. Every vampire I've heard, I don't care what era, I just know they were wearing lace collars.
I suppose, but I always picture Louis as just this moaning, moping emo guy. And this is like, you know, that's why I like, at least, I think it's in the book where basically Lestat finally just shows up and slaps him and says, just stop it. Stop moaning. Yeah. I'm tired of listening to you moan. And, you know, then I think he bites the interviewer wants him to bite him. But
Right. Tom Cruise and Christian Slater. Yeah.
All right. So let's get to the big question before we wrap up this show. Yeah. We're watching this movie. We're following their new rules for vampires. And then we get to the ending where Susan Sarandon basically makes a decision. Yeah, I don't wanna. And I thought the way it's cut, it's not obvious whose neck she's cut at first. Yeah. I thought she cut into Catherine Deneuve's.
I was wondering about that too initially, but it's pretty clear she cut her own throat.
Right. And then basically that causes the anger that causes Catherine Deneuve to get excited. All the zombies show up. They throw her down four flights of stairs. To be fair, she goes down the middle, but whatever.
Yeah.
And apparently, if you ever get a very sharp impact, you develop progeria, but whatever. I don't care. Maybe it's an injury thing. Maybe it's like death becomes her. It's like, you're immortal. Just don't ever get an injury because... Eh. Yeah. And then everybody starts to crumble, which is cool. And I'm like, oh, that's an interesting way to end the... Oh, we're not done. What did you think of the very ending?
I thought it felt tacked on. I honestly thought, like, are you hinting for a sequel?
That's why they did it. They were hoping, because there's books, they were hoping to do sequels.
I can talk my way around it, because those guys that crumbled, they were already in that state. They were hyper-aged. They couldn't take the loss of Miriam. Sarah had just been turned, literally within days. She was still at full strength. And maybe, I kind of like the idea that without Miriam, like Miriam might have been slowly feeding on them all this time. That's why they ended up dying.
Mm-hmm.
Without her, she becomes the new Miriam.
Well, the other thing I was thinking is something they did say in the film, which is there's two bloods and they're fighting, but they're not done. Maybe that's why she doesn't crumble, because she's not fully turned yet.
Maybe.
I don't know, but I agree with you. I thought the ending was dumb.
I thought it should have ended with Dan Hedaya standing in the living room, you know, wondering where everybody went.
Well, and quite honestly, having Miriam kick and scream and die just the way that, what's her name, did in Blade Runner?
Chris. Daryl Hannah. Yeah. Daryl Hannah, yep.
Yeah, I would rather, if she had just crumbled, and honestly, I would rather that Susan Sarandon had just sort of bled out and that little thing of evil.
The end of it.
I think that would have been a much better ending.
Yeah. No, this was a sequel big.
Yeah, which is a shame. So if you haven't seen the film, do yourself a favor. As soon as Miriam starts crumbling away, just turn it off. But is the rest of the movie worth watching? Is it worth getting to that point in the first place? We should probably do that thing.
The finish.
So Max, The Hunger. What did you think of?
No, I couldn't eat another bite. Thanks.
Not your hunger.
Oh.
The Hunger.
Oh, The Hunger.
The movie.
What is The Hunger? You moron!
You've just been talking about for an hour.
Yeah.
What did you think of The Hunger?
I think it's pretty cool. I think there's a lot of style over substance in it.
Mm-hmm.
But the style is so good. And it's David Bowie! It's Catherine Deneuve, for God's sake. I would just watch those two play checkers for an hour and a half. It would still be hot.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's rather unashamedly about style over substance.
Mm-hmm. Which, quite but honestly, it's the 80s. That was kind of the theme.
That was the decade. Yeah, pretty much. I thought it worked. It's, again, you have to be in the right mood. This is, again, for modern audiences, this would be a little hard. Because it is languidly paced.
Yeah, but were you ever disinterested or bored?
Nope.
No.
Nope. I always wanted to see what was coming next. Still don't get all the stuff with the monkeys.
And I would have edited, like, there's a scene where they're watching a monkey that has progeria die, and then suddenly it's like Time Machine, where they have this bad stop motion animation, and it, like, crumbles, which makes no sense anyway.
Yeah, it's like turns into time-lapse photography, because not, apparently progeria not only makes you die of old age, but also makes you decay in 15 seconds, right down to skeleton.
Well, all the bacteria are going at super speed, so you just want to sort of dub over it.
Yeah, that was a little silly.
That little scene where with the stop motion, I would totally have cut out. Didn't work.
That shouldn't
didn't
have
make
been
sense.
There. The rest of it was all right.
Yeah. Any stuff with monkeys makes me uptight. I don't. So, yeah, well, they're just too close to us and stuff. And it's like, I don't like seeing people do stuff to animals at all.
Yeah,
but monkeys
is
always the
worst.
Like the animal, when the monkey goes down in Andromeda Strain, I had to look up. It's like, please tell me that there was somebody on set. They actually didn't hurt the monkey. They didn't hurt the monkey.
Nope. They did not shock the monkey.
No. Yeah. I'm going to say yes to all of your stuff. I know you haven't asked me yet, but that's fine. I get it.
I figured you'd jump in, but what did you think of it? So you liked it also?
I did like it. I think it is if you weren't horny before you saw this film, you're going to be in the middle. And I don't care. There was almost nothing for me. There's a couple of brief scenes of David Bowie in the shower and that one guy, you see his chest, I guess. It's mostly if you're a lesbian or if you're someone who just likes to look at beautiful women, I think you're going to be way more excited.
Oh,
but
yeah.
It was still,
nobody like that. Nobody like that.
There's points where I'm kind of looking away because I'm embarrassed. I mean, I'm not a prude, but I live near one.
Prude adjacent.
Yeah. So it's very effective at that aspect of vampirism, the whole enticing the person in and enclosing them in your network or whatever, your, in this case, condition. I think the ending is terrible. And it just another example of studio execs not knowing what the heck they're doing and to keep their big fat noses out of it. Yeah. It may be Tony's first film, but I think he did a really good job, even if it's very reminiscent of one of his brother's films. I still think it was very stylish. It was very cool and very steamy. So, if you haven't seen it and you like vampires, and you, by all means, go take a look.
Yeah, definitely.
But the other thing you should do is you should take a look at our poll question. Look. It's very easy this week. Are you a fan of vampires? And if you are, why? Why do you like vampires? If you're not, why don't you like vampires? And to tell us, you can answer in many, many ways. One of them is to just email us directly at us@maxmikemovies.com. We can go to our website where we have lots and lots of episodes you can listen to. Use the search function if you're wondering, hey, did those guys cover that movie? Probably. And there it's maxmikemovies.com. And you can also give us ideas for series or movies you think should be part of series or give us feedback, whatever you'd like. You can find us on pretty much every podcast app that will ever be created because they get their content for free. Why should they ask? And we are, of course, Max Mike Movies. We are on social media. We are on Facebook. We are on Blueski and we are on Mastodon. Max Mike Movies, big surprise. And last but not least, we have our hotline, which we love you to call and leave messages on so that we can quote you on the show. And that, of course, is area code 617-398-7266. The number again, 617-398-7266. But
when you call, be sure to tell us what you're wearing.
No.
In detail.
No. But we are not going to have a show next week. There's a big holiday right when we record, and, well, we have things to do.
It is Celebrate the Massacre of the Turkey Day.
Max doesn't like turkeys.
Turkeys are evil.
So in 2 weeks' time, what are we going to watch, Max, as part of I Want to Watch Your Film?
Another movie!
What?
And this one, well, it's a little ambiguous if it's about a vampire, despite the fact it's in the title.
Ooh.
Yes, we are going to watch a movie about making a movie, about making the original Nosferatu.
Oh.
Yes, we are going to see Shadow of the Vampire, which coincidentally to this movie, or is it, has Willem Dafoe in it.
Ooh. Creepy.
Willem Dafoe, vampire or not?
Ooh.
Tune in next week when we find
out. 2 weeks.
2 weeks. I said 2 weeks. If you heard 1 week, you're lying. Your ears are lying to your brain. Fake news. Fake news.
You're dead.
Yeah. Next week. Next 2 weeks. Bye.
This has been a co-production of The Voice of Max and The Movie Wrench.